It's the NBC World News Roundup. Major news developments with on-the-scene reports from the worldwide staff of NBC News. This is Peter Hackis in the NBC Newsroom in Washington. Here are the headlines. Buenos Aires, President Eisenhower flies to an Argentine resort today for a weekend of golf, fishing, and relaxation. London, all of Britain is happily excited about Princess Margaret's coming marriage to a handsome court photographer. Beirut, UAR masses troops along Israeli border. A mistake could begin a war. Squaw Valley, California, U.S. takes second place in Olympics, but still is far behind Russia. I'll return in 1 minute with today's NBC World News Roundup.
Coming up on Monitor this weekend on NBC, a trip to Greece to visit the site where the original Olympic Games were held over 2,000 years ago. A trip to the now peaceful island of Guam, where one of the bloodiest battles of World War II was fought. A voyage down the mighty Mississippi River with a ship's captain who remembers the colorful era when the steamboat Robert E. Lee and other great paddle wheelers plied the treacherous waters. You'll go on a most unusual shopping expedition with Monitor and Sir Edmund Hillary as the famous explorer prepares for his forthcoming Himalayan expedition. And you'll be on hand for daring aerial maneuvers at the annual snowcap fly-in of a unit of Minnesota Civil Air Patrol. In observance of Heart Month, Monitor introduced you to Dr. Paul Dudley White and other world-renowned specialists who will discuss the progress being made in the fight against heart disease. Celebrities, music, news, sports events, and special features from all over the world. You'll find them all on Monitor all weekend long over most of these NBC stations. Now, the NBC World News Roundup.
U.S. and Argentine security agents reportedly have tightened their watch over President Eisenhower following last night's demonstration in the streets of Buenos Aires, during which an American flag was burned and a socialist mob ripped down Eisenhower welcoming banners. Officials say the demonstrators, 500 strong, were followers of deposed Argentine dictator Perón, out to embarrass the Frondizi government rather than make a direct attack upon Mr. Eisenhower. Aside from this one incident, which is generally considered a minor one, the president's Argentine reception has been the biggest and most enthusiastic of his Latin American tour. Today, Mr. Eisenhower begins a weekend of relaxation from his official duties. For the story, here's a report from Russ Tornabin in Buenos Aires.
A varied program today for President Eisenhower includes the wreath-laying ceremony of the statue to South America's liberator, a stop-off at a crowded seaside resort, and then a flight to a mountain resort in the foothills of the Andes. Tomorrow's schedule shows no planned events, but there's no secret that golf and fishing abound at the resort. The wreath-laying ceremony is at the statue of General San Martin in a huge plaza here. There is a short flight to Mar del Plata, the seaside resort, where hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans escape the humid heat of summer. The president is doing quite well in this warm weather and goes later today some 1,100 miles southwest to the mountains to San Carlos de Bariloche, the little Switzerland of South America, a chance for golf and fishing. Mar del Plata is said to be ready to turn out an even greater welcome than yesterday's 500,000 or more, which line tree-lined avenues, Buenos Aires, to see the president wave from his open car. The shouts of Perón supporters have not begun to spoil his warm welcome in Argentina. They are considered the shouts of a vocal group stirring up pre-election support. Last night here, an American flag was burned. The president will not hear the Peronista echoes at quiet Bariloche. This is Russ Tornabin, NBC News, Buenos Aires.
Merry old England is just that this morning, reveling in the joyous news that the most eligible member of the royal family is engaged to be married. For the story, here now is a report from Joseph C. Harsh in London.
Just to recapitulate the biggest news story of the day, Mr. Anthony Armstrong Jones, a gay 29-year-old bachelor who likes jazz and jive, rides a motorcycle, wears a suede leather jacket and drainpipe trousers, has closed up his photographer's studio in Pimlico and gone to Windsor Castle for the weekend. On Monday, he will move into Buckingham Palace to get better acquainted with the family into which he will marry sometime this summer as the husband of Princess Margaret. The princess, also 29 years old, will continue to live with her mother a quarter of a mile down the street at Clarence House until the marriage. It's the first time in 457 years that a royal English princess has married a man without a title. His mother does have a title. She is Countess of Ross by a second marriage. He may or may not be given the title himself. Queen Elizabeth, it is learned, approved announcement of the engagement after the birth of her second son. The princess is today wearing her engagement ring, a ruby set in gold and surrounded by diamonds in the shape of a flower. This is Joseph C. Harsh of NBC News in London.
From the troubled Middle East today come more reports of Arab troop concentrations along the Israeli border. That story in this report from Tom Streithorst in Beirut.
Amid the swirl of conflicting reports about Arab-Israeli war preparations, NBC learns from a reliable diplomatic source the extent of Nasser's mobilization on the Israeli frontier. In the Sinai Peninsula, scene of the Egyptian rout in 1956, UAR armed forces have beefed up from two brigades to three divisions. This means that three-fifths of the Egyptian army is now in Sinai. The bulk of Syria's approximately 65,000-man army is always in place on the Israeli frontier. But additional units of 4,000 Syrians are reliably reported to have moved into position. Syrian transport companies have been alerted to turn their trucks and buses over to the army in case war breaks out. Egyptian armed forces have already requisitioned 100 civilian trucks for possible military use. Although Nasser failed to make another inflammatory speech yesterday, observers are still concerned. A Western diplomat commented, "Neither side may want war, but one trigger-happy farmer in the border area might start shooting, and the war could be on by mistake." Tom Streithorst, NBC News, Beirut.
There's a new word in the nation's missile lexicon this morning, the Global Range Ballistic Missile, the GRBM. It's not here yet, but it will be someday, according to Pentagon Research Chief Dr. Herbert York. It will have a range of from 10 to 15,000 miles, he predicts, which could give the Russians another massive advantage. Instead of firing these GRBMs along the classic North Polar Route, says Dr. York, they might fire them the other way, that is, along the Southern Polar Route. And that's where we just don't have any early radar warning. All of the U.S. distant early warning radar is being set up to the far north. York suggests, however, that a successful MIDAS warning system, a series of satellites on permanent station to detect instantly the firing of an enemy missile, will give us sufficient warning. The first test firing of a MIDAS model spy-in-the-sky satellite failed yesterday to go into orbit after its launching at Cape Canaveral. The United States, which wasn't given much of a chance to finish in the money at this year's Winter Olympic Games, apparently has a good chance today to come out second to Russia. Here's the story in a report from Ed Arno at Squaw Valley.
In a dramatic competition of the cripples, America's David Jenkins has given the U.S. its second gold medal of the Winter Olympic Games with a dazzling, near-perfect figure skating performance despite a badly pulled groin muscle. Leading going into the free skating competition, Karol Devine of Czechoslovakia came out second best, with him going on the ice with a severely bruised leg. It was a big day for the U.S., which isn't figured to be overwhelmingly strong in these winter sports events. Jenkins' win, plus a silver medal for Betsy Snyder in the ladies' slalom, pushed us into second place in the unofficial point totals, which is tremendously dominated by the Russians, 153.5-61 for us. As things stand now on gold medals, Russia is way out in front with 7, most in speed skating, with Germany and Sweden trailing with 3 each. Tomorrow, the U.S. will be shooting to consolidate its chances for a third and probably last gold medal when our hockey team meets the USSR. If we get over that hurdle, our surprisingly inspired hockey players are considered unstoppable. The weather outlook calls for slashing winds along with light snow. This is Ed Arno, NBC News, at the Winter Olympics in Squaw Valley.
As a rule, the U.S. Senate, like the House of Representatives, adjourns Friday for the weekend until Monday morning. But the Senate will hold a session today, beginning this morning, a session which could last until midnight. It's the 11th day of the civil rights debate, and according to New York's Republican Senator Keating, it may drag on for weeks of continuous session beginning Monday, with time out only on Sundays. The furor over communism and religion continues. In a new development, Chairman Walter of the House Un-American Activities Committee has invited officials of the National Council of Churches, which represents 60 million Protestants, to testify before his committee. The invitation follows a telegram from 6 council leaders to Walter, demanding that he apologize to the group and retract what they call his untrue statement, supporting charges that the controversial Air Force manual that there is communism in U.S. churches. This is Peter Hackis in Washington. Now, hear this.
International attention is being focused on President Eisenhower's visit to South America. And the news department of the NBC radio network is going all out to bring listeners complete and comprehensive coverage of this historic trip. Stay tuned throughout the day for on-the-scene reports from all key points along the president's route. And be listening for the special comprehensive programs on Eisenhower in Latin America on Tuesday, March the 1st, and Thursday, March 3rd, over most of these NBC stations. Now, more news.
There's been another development in the continuing series of demonstrations in the South over segregated lunch counters. Here's a report from Wayne Willard of station WSJS, Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Approximately 300 Negroes attended an NAACP-sponsored meeting here last night and voted to boycott stores with segregated lunch counters. They were told that they should pass the word along to other Negroes in the city for maximum effectiveness, and that all Negro ministers in the city would make the same request in the pulpits tomorrow morning. Carl Matthews, the first lunch counter demonstrator here, criticized Negroes who have been buying in stores with segregated eating facilities. He said, "If you don't wish to help this movement, please don't hinder it by showing a lack of unity." A collection was taken up at the meeting to assist the white and Negro college students who were arrested early this week. Their trial has been set for next Wednesday. Reaction to the part Wake Forest students played in the incident has been varied. However, college officials indicated no disciplinary action has been planned, and they pointed out that the Wake Forest students had acted entirely on their own. Wayne Willard, WSJS in Winston-Salem.
Here in Washington, what with talk of missile gaps and the space lag, Congress has declared war on a common enemy. Here now is a report from John Connolly.
The nation's capital is proud of its title, City of Trees, though a continuing headache is the inability to confine the birds to those trees. Congressional action might soon send the educated birds of the city back to their natural habitat. No longer would the starlings be permitted to listen in on the procedures of senators and congressmen, only to screech the secrets over city streets each evening. No longer would pigeons be permitted to strut pompously with puffed-out chest before the high justices of our land. They would be banished from the Supreme Court building to find no refuge across the street in the Capitol building. The House Appropriations Committee has issued a declaration of war against the birds, agreed to spend $35,000 for an electronic hotfoot on the Supreme Court building. But like good generals in any war, the congressmen first made certain of their home defenses. The Supreme Court won't get its apparatus until the Capitol building is also protected from the know-it-all pigeon and the loudmouth starling. John Connolly, NBC News, Washington.
Now, once again, here is your announcer.
Many federal income taxpayers still find difficulty in determining who can be claimed as an exemption and under what circumstances. There are many exemption possibilities. For example, you can deduct for young people even if they're partially self-supporting or if they're bona fide students. Many times, oldsters may be claimed too, and under certain conditions, other relatives. There are, of course, certain rules and regulations that govern even in involved circumstances. If you're in doubt, check your instruction booklet carefully or one of the IRS tax guides, and you'll probably find the answer. If you're still uncertain, phone your local Revenue Service office, but soon, while lines still are not clogged. That April 15th filing deadline approaches pretty fast, you know, and you don't want to be confronted with a last-minute snap decision that might cost you money. So if you have a dependency problem, find out about it now. The answer may well help you again next year. Remember, finally, that while there's a good chance that you can validly claim persons to whom support you contribute 50% or more, IRS disallows all dependency claims for pets, even though you regard them more highly than people. Again, the World News Roundup.
The chief of the U.S. military mission to Brazil, Rear Admiral John Quinn, has convened a special board to investigate the aircraft collision and crash, which took 61 lives at Rio de Janeiro on Thursday. 35 of those who died were Americans, most of them members of the U.S. Navy band. The Brazilian Air Ministry sticks to its preliminary theory that the U.S. plane, a Navy DC-6, was off course at the time of its impact with the Brazilian passenger plane. At Shannon, Ireland, a coroner's inquest is scheduled for today into the cause of the death of 29 people who were aboard the Italian airliner, which crashed on takeoff yesterday. Of the 23 survivors, all but one are listed in critical condition. Officials fear some of them may die of their injuries. This is Peter Hackus in Washington, and that's today's NBC World News Roundup, produced by NBC News.
This is the NBC Radio Network.